Hey hoes, and welcome back to another episode of Morning Cup of Hope podcast. I'm Imani, your host and main ho, here to help you on this journey of finding your purpose, getting your shit together, and living the life you want. Pour up your morning cup of whatever you're sipping on, get ready to unleash your inner ho, and let's get into this episode. All right, hoes. Today we have Brittany, who describes herself as just another woman trying to figure out her 20s. She's an advocate for practicing self-love in the midst of chaos and a believer of the look good, feel good mentality because confidence goes hand in hand with your mental health. She believes that being in tune with your emotions and the emotions of those around her is very important. Her goal is to inspire others to take time and love on themselves and reflect on how they have been coping with life. So I'm really excited for y'all to meet her today. So welcome in today, Brittany.
Hello.
How are you?
Thank you for being here.
Oh, no problem. Like when you reached out to me, I was just like, oh my goodness, someone wants to hear like my thoughts and stuff. It's really.
Yeah, your TikTok and everything, like, it was really interesting to me. And I feel like a lot of the stuff you were talking about, I'm like, this is stuff that I learned in my 20s or things that I wish I would have learned and I'm still trying to figure out. So I definitely thought it was important for us to talk about some of those things that you've discovered in your journey.
It's so funny because when I was starting to post about those things, like it was more like I was like, ever since I've been getting like deeper into my 20s, I've been having like reflecting moments. So when I started posting those things about things I've learned, it forced me to reflect. And I didn't even realize that people were into that. Like, I was just more so in my reflecting part of my life. So that's where that came from.
Okay. And I think it's so important that you share that because honestly, you could have just sat down and like journaled it or just thought about like what you learned and not shared it. But I think it's so important because a lot of times we feel like we're behind or that we don't know what other people are going through. And you are sharing that and making people realize like this is normal.
So. Yeah, like it's so interesting because when people hold things in and don't really talk about those things, like about things that they're going through or things that they've been reflecting on, it makes you feel more alone. So it's like reassuring to know that everyone, like as a whole, because we're all in this life together. There's only so much support we could just have on our own.
Yeah, 100%. So obviously, y'all, we have a lot that we're going to talk about. Like, we already hopping right into it before we get to our questions and stuff. So let's backtrack a little bit. Like, I have a little icebreaker that I want to do with you. So it's four questions. We can go through one at a time. So the first question is, what's going good in your life?
So I want to say this past year, I had a transition because initially I wanted to go to medical school and I was applying for that in the past year. And like I would describe it as like the best year and worst year of my life because I made that my whole personality going to med school. Like my immigrant parents were like, yes. But I was like, let me step back. Do I want this? And I've always wanted to be in the mental health field. And I thankfully that same year I was applying for medical school, I withdrew and I applied to a master's program and I got in. It was a very interesting year, but I want to say that's something going good for me. And I haven't really looked back.
Well, congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you. Like, looking back, I was crazy because I, in the midst of me doing the application, like, people were talking to me like, Brittany, what's going on? And I was like, I don't know.
I'm just here.
Yeah, basically.
Right. And I know you said you had immigrant parents and you were trying to kind of figure out, like, is this what I want to do? Do you feel like it was really a push from your parents as why you even started going into that field?
When I would go to church and the aunties would always come in with that question, like, oh, what are you going to do with your life? I feel like I always had that pre-answer, like, oh, pediatrician. And they're like, oh, wow. And my mom just ran with it. It, to the point where she even changed my name in the contacts to Dr. Britt. Like, you know, she took it far.
Right.
But she never really forced it on me. I kind of brought it on myself and she ran with it. She's like,
like she was proud of you.
Oh, yeah. Because it's so interesting. They only think about the careers doctor, lawyer, engineer, doctor, lawyer, engineer. And all the other ones are like, what's.
Right. Like, we're not doing those things.
No.
No. Yeah. I can relate to that because I feel like when I first started college, like I went to school for criminal justice and psychology. So when I started school, I genuinely was like, okay, I want to do behavioral analysis. Like, it sounds amazing. Like, all this stuff is really interesting to me. But I feel like at some point I realized like, oh shit, this is not what I want to do. But it sounded so good. And people were so excited when I said it. I'm like, well, I'm in this shit. Like, I'm going to just keep going with it. Like, I'm just keep saying, like, when people ask me, oh, I want to do behavioral analysis for the FBI. Like, it was just one of those things that people got excited about. And I feel like people were so proud to hear me say that, that, like, I was nervous to back down and say, oh, I realize it's not what I want to do no more. It was too much.
Yeah. No, it's so true. Like, when you feel set in something and then your whole family hears about it and brings it up, like, so it just makes you feel stuck.
Yeah, it's hard, but you definitely got to break out of it. But I'm happy that you realize it is actually what you want to do versus me. Like, I realize it's not, which, I mean, my parents weren't like disappointed or anything, but I definitely felt like I was overthinking it more than everybody else was.
Yeah, it's very true. Like, it's like something to think about. It's just like people are like so caught up in their own life to the point where you think they're thinking about you. They really think about themselves and you're like, oh, okay. It's a big deal to me.
Right. That's it. But yeah. Well, I'll answer the icebreaker too. What's going good in my life? I would say like this podcast, because I'm trying to start it back up because I fell off last year, but I'm finally making an effort to get back into it. So this feels pretty good to be getting back into it.
That's nice.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. All right. So question two of our icebreaker. So what's one thing that you're looking forward to?
So something I'm looking forward to is, it's so scary. I'm about to finish the program next year, going into my career. I feel like I'm in a transitional period. I still feel like a baby because I haven't really been thrown into life. That's like, I feel like being in school puts you in that little bubble, that protective bubble. So I'm looking forward to transitioning into true adulthood because I feel like I haven't been there yet.
That's exciting, though. I feel like that's like an interesting spot to be in. Like, it's very scary, but I feel like it's also very empowering. So you'll do it. You'll be good.
I hope so.
And you will. Don't stress about it. I feel like when I speak to my parents and just older people in general, they feel like, they say like, you never really feel like you have it all together. So you just kind of have to step out there, take it one day at a time, and you'll be successful. Well, yeah, you got this. So just to preface y'all, what me and Brittany were talking about today is just really learning about yourself in your 20s, things that you wish you would have learned, things that she did learn, and how she's came to these conclusions. And I really got this idea from her TikTok page. So after that, I was just like creeping on your TikTok page, scrolling. And I was like, I'm gonna reach out to her because I think this is something that needs to be talked about. Because I know for me, this is a lot of stuff and I'm about to be 30, I'm 28. And I feel like some of this stuff I haven't learned or I'm in the process of still trying to figure it out. So maybe you could give some tips to the girls and they could figure it out a little bit earlier and not have to go through all this stress.
I'm gonna try my best. Right. I'm still learning too. Both learn.
Look, we're gonna learn together.
Yeah.
So kind of reflecting on your journey throughout your 20s, so what are some of the most significant lessons that you feel like you've learned? And that can be in your relationships, just navigating adulthood, or anything.
I want to say the biggest thing that I've taken in is not to take things as personally from people. Because even when people don't even try to get you down, even if it's not as deliberate, like most things that people say to you, like let's say insults or like everyday things, it's more a reflection of them than it is of you. Mm-hmm. And I used to take everything personally. Like let's say like I dealt with like a rude cashier, or let's say one of my friends was having a bad day and they're being more like, you know, standoffish, like one-worded text. And then I came to realize, like, people, it's so easy to just project your emotions on others. Like, they could just, I don't know what they're going through behind closed doors and stuff. So I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, and I think that's so important because I think, especially when we're younger, we take everything so personally. Like, we let anybody get, and honestly, I'm saying when we're younger, even into adulthood, like, we still have that mentality that, whatever someone says about us is true or they can get us down. But I think it is true that a lot of times it is a reflection on them. Like, maybe they're insecure about themselves. So, in order to make themselves feel better, they have to make other people feel just as bad as they do. And we don't talk about that. I feel like we think, oh, they said, oh, I'm ugly or I'm fat or I'm not smart. And we're thinking, okay, that must be true. When in reality, a lot of these people that know you or have talked about you, they don't know you. And that's one of the most important things. People that know you and love you, they aren't going to say these things about you. The people that are talking about you are people that don't even have an idea who you are or what you're doing or what you've been through. So they can't even really formulate an opinion of who you are. So I think that's so important.
No, seriously.
Yeah. Keeping on with that. So I know you don't want to listen to what other people say and things like that. And you really have to form a relationship with yourself and know who you are. So how have you kind of cultivated a positive relationship with yourself to whereas those negative things from people, don't affect you as much?
I think something I began to do is just force myself to be alone sometimes because I feel like when I'm surrounded by too many people, I feel like I get more influenced about like their emotions because I read off of energies really well. So if I surround myself with like low energy people, that's what I become. And I just like, especially during the pandemic when I was alone, I did a lot of like, who am I like when I'm by myself and when I'm not around people. And it's just taking moments alone, and I'm like, do I even like myself right now? Like, and making sure that, I don't know, like, it might even sound crazy, like having conversations with yourself, like checking in, and just making sure at the end of the day you feel like you're your own best friend. That probably sounds so corny, but I feel like that's very helpful.
Yeah, I don't think it sounds corny at all. I mean, some people may think it is, but I feel like we all feel like we need to be our best friend. We may not just put it in those words. Like, we have to take care of ourselves and appreciate ourselves and things like that, which is what you need to do for your best friend and things like that. So I think it just comes to putting yourself first and putting your needs first. And that's important. And even going to what you said of like talking to yourself, I know like, it, most people are like, oh, you talk to yourself, you crazy, but it makes sense because I think I don't necessarily, well, I do be talking to myself, but I think also like something as simple as like journaling, even though that's not talking to yourself, that's kind of just getting your feelings out and, being able to see what you're thinking and going through so that you can work through it. So I think that or talking to yourself is very important for, trying to grow and figure out who you are.
Oh yeah, it's so true. Like my mom always reminds me, she's like, you came into this world by yourself. Hey now. So it's just like making sure that you're trying to self-sustain. I think it's so important because depending on other people, like it just could lead you down a road of disappointment. And not even to sound negative, it's just like making sure that like if other people don't show up for you, you're able to show up for yourself.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I do. And it is hard to, rely on yourself solely because I feel like, especially throughout life, when you're coming up as a child, there's always someone that you can depend on, whether it's your like parents or a friend or someone to help you. But like at some point, although people will be there to help you, you have to be able to stand on your own and, do what's best for you because at the end of the day, everybody else is putting themselves first. So you have to put yourself first. Yeah. And then I guess going back to, I know you said that you like to like be alone sometimes and talk to yourself and work through stuff. And I know that kind of self-care and stuff like that is so important to your emotional health. So are there any other like rituals or habits that you have that's really helped you like through those challenges?
I want to say, I feel like it kind of goes with like how I like living by like look good, feel good. Like it'd be as simple as like me just taking my time doing my self-care routine, Like it's so funny. My boyfriend, everyone in my family are like, why do you have all these goo products? I'm like, it does something. Like just taking a moment, you know, and just putting all those serums, like taking a longer shower, getting my eyebrows done, getting a pedicure and stuff. It's just like, I feel like it's almost as if like doing love languages that you want from your partner, but doing it for yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, yeah, I have my boyfriend and he does those things, but I need to show myself that I can do it for myself too. And I think that helps as well. So that goes with like the rituals and stuff.
Yeah. And that's actually really good because I feel like, and I was going to say people, but specifically me, I always talk about how important, you know, self-care is and self-love. But then when I reflect, honestly, I feel like I don't really take time for myself or do those things to support my like mental health and things like that. Like when it comes to other people, if somebody needs something or, you know, we need to figure out some self-care for you, like I'm right there. I'm helping you. We figuring it out. We getting your life together. But I feel like when it comes to me, I put myself on the back burner, like not as a priority for me to do those things to keep my mental health or keep my sanity or whatever the case may be. So maybe I'm still learning how to do that for myself, but it's good that you already have something in place that you're consistently doing and making sure like, look, I need to put myself first. I'm going to do this consistently to make sure that my mental health is where it needs to be. That's important.
But if I'm going to be honest, there are some moments where I fall off, and when I don't mm-hmm. do it, the room be looking crazy, the bathroom will be looking crazy, my car looking crazy, I be looking crazy. So there are those moments, and like I still embrace those moments because I can't just be on it all the time. And like even though it takes me a while back to get back on the routine, like it's just like I guess embracing the low moments too, because I feel like I'm human and it happens.
No, it definitely happens. But I think that it is important that, you know, even though you fall off, you get back to it. Like you are consistent with saying, okay, I'm going to do this for myself, whether I take a few days off or even if it turns out a month off, you go back to it. And I know they say like when you're consistent or when you're inconsistent with yourself, you're showing yourself that you can't trust what you say. You know, you can't believe in yourself and things like that. So just something as simple as saying, I fell off, but I'm getting back to it. You're showing yourself, okay, I do appreciate myself. I'm going to work hard to get to whatever this goal is. And I think sometimes it's a lot easier, like I said, to do it for other people versus yourself. Like I find it hard to just hold myself accountable when nobody else will be affected.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole thing. But kind of going back to like where I found you at TikTok, social media is so prevalent, especially in our generation. I mean, you're younger than me, so maybe, I don't even know, we might be different generations. I'm an old lady.
I think we're in the same because I'm going to turn 25. But if I'm going to be honest, like the Gen X, Gen Alpha, it passes my brain. So I don't even know. I feel like there's some blurred lines.
I don't even know, because I feel like they say that. Am I like a millennial? Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm borderline something weird. And I'm like, but I don't relate to them people. Like, I don't.
Oh, the millennial. So it's like, yeah, I was like Gen Z millennial mix.
Yeah.
I don't really understand the mixes of the generation.
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it's, I'd be looking like, because I think I'm like the middle of like the generation, like going into the next. And I'm like, just put me over here because I don't know what these people doing.
I don't know them.
Right. I don't know them. But I feel like social media, I guess I'll just say for all generations, except for like the real, real old people, is like everybody's on it. You're looking at it every day. So it's so easy to start comparing yourself to other people's lives and things like that. And I know a lot of women struggle with that, especially, you know, being on social media all the time. So I was going to say, how have you overcome that tendency to compare yourself? But let me backtrack and say, have you overcome that? Or is that something that you're still working on?
Ooh, that's a deep one. It's so hard not to compare myself to other people online, like other creators. Like when like certain videos flop compared to other people that are like in the same space, I'm just like, ooh, I guess I'm not worth it. But like, it's just, I guess something I try to do that kind of helps is taking social media breaks, because I feel like when I'm on it too much, like my grasp on reality is not there. Mm. And it's just, as much as social media brings good things, like it's kind of like a bubble and like puts like a glazed perception of life. Like it's not real. At the end of the day, you could turn off your phone and touch some grass. So that's what I try and tell myself, because like I try not to put a facade on my my account. But at the end of the day, you try to show up as your best self, and you know it kind of messes with your head when you like see other creators trying to do the same thing. But I try and take the breaks so I could just, you know, come back to reality a little bit. But it's very hard. So I don't know if that's something I'm ever really going to overcome, because it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
Like, especially Instagram. Like, I'd be deleting Instagram like every other week. Like, everyone's getting married, everyone having a baby, everyone business. I'm just like, okay, let me step
back. It's hard. It's hard. And like, what I try to do is always tell myself, like you said, it's not real. But it's hard to say that, because when that's all you're seeing. But I try to keep in mind that people are only posting the good things about their lives. Like, they posting, oh, I got married. Oh, I just had this baby. I just got this raise. But they're not posting, oh, I just got a divorce. Oh, I just got fired from my job. Like, I'm homeless. Like, they're not posting all the bad stuff. So a lot of times the same stuff that you're going through and you're feeling like you're behind, or you feel like you're struggling, or whatever the case may be, people are going through the same thing that you are. They just not putting it out there. So I think that's why it is important for people to be authentic online. But then it's also hard to do that. Like, I know when I'm not a TikToker by any means, but when I did start trying to make some TikToks, that was one of the biggest things that was coming to my mind. Cause I'm just like, okay, when I was recording, trying to make these videos, I'm like, okay, I'm trying to put on this facade of who I want to be online. And then I'm like, no, you don't want to do that. So I want to be authentic. But then when I made the videos of me being authentic, I'm like, ooh, do I want to put this out here? Because now people are going to perceive me in, you know, whatever way. And it's hard to kind of find that, you know, the good middle ground of, okay, I'm being authentic, but still having this persona of who I want to put out there. Because at the end of the day, once you put it out there, people perceive you however they want to perceive you. And you can't do anything about that. So I think it is hard. And I do compare myself to everybody, no matter what. But you just, the biggest thing that I say is just keep in mind that they're putting out there what they want you to see, not all the things that are going on in their life every single day. I wish they would, though. It's a whole struggle.
It definitely is.
Yeah. So I know that we just talked about self-care a little bit, and you mentioned that you had immigrant parents at the beginning. So I kind of wanted to ask, do you feel like your cultural background kind of influenced how you look at self-care?
Oof, definitely. So for my parents, they're the type to work on their birthday, work most holidays, work outside of the 9-to-5, you know, the lines are blurred from when they take a break. And I remember watching that as I grew up, and I was just like, ooh, I don't know how I'm gonna work. And I was like, am I gonna marry rich? Because I was like, I cannot do this. But as I grew up and watching how much like they sacrificed and seeing the work ethic, it showed me, if I'm being honest, I can't do that. And I would see moments where they would even sacrifice like taking time for themselves, and they would be exhausted. And I could notice moments when they weren't able to show up as their best self. And that kind of taught me that, like, even when I go to work and they watch me like take my PTO, like it was even to the point where my old job, I was in the negatives. I was like, I'm taking my day off. I cannot. Like, I would just guard it off as like mental health days, taking it like time away, because at the end of the day, I'm not a robot. And you take my moments, and they look at me and they're like, Brittany, how are you gonna like take care of yourself when you're older? I'm like, they'll be okay. These corporations are gonna be okay. I need to take a moment for myself so I could show up as my best self, because if I continue and push myself too hard, the productivity is gonna be down and very low. So seeing them, like, yes, I feel like I have that passion and determined, but I have my level, and I know when my battery reaches like 10% down to 5%, I'm checking out. And it just takes them in awe, and they always are like, Brittany, are you serious? You're only young, like you're only like 24. And I'm like, and They'll be okay. The corporations will be okay.
That's crazy. And I don't have immigrant parents, but I feel like from people I've talked to, that is one thing that I always hear about immigrant parents. Like, they are working to the bone. Like, they are not stopping. They are working day and night trying. And I understand, I mean, coming to a different country, trying to really make yourself successful, I could see that. But you got to give yourself a break, because you're going to run yourself crazy trying to work all day, every day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, it's important. I feel like not immigrant parents, but just Black parents, they're not necessarily the same as working day and night, but definitely when you're talking about, like, the company will be okay. Like, and I just feel like maybe the older generation are very loyal to companies, and they believe, like, you know, we need to do this for the company, and we need to work hard and never take time off, and, you know, do whatever we need to do to help this company succeed. But I feel like the younger generation, we now realize these companies are not loyal to us, so we're not being loyal to them. Like, I'm gonna take my time off. I'm gonna hop jobs if I need to. Like, I'm gonna do whatever I can to make sure I'm good before this company that has billions of dollars is good. Because at the end of the day, we see how quickly they're laying off people or firing people or, you know, not giving people the money they deserve because they don't care about us. So, like, why should we put in all this effort to make sure this company is good if they're not gonna do the same for us?
Oh, yeah. No, do it with no notice to drop you like a bad habit and you're gone. And I'm like, okay.
Which is crazy because it's just like, y'all, and I understand, like, from a corporate, like, mindset, but I'm just like, at the end of the day, people, actual humans are running these companies. I'm just like, you have no, like, you don't care about these people that much. So you're just like, oh, we'll lay them off. We'll do this. Like, I'm just like, but I guess once you get to that level as a CEO, you're looking at money and the business. You're not looking at the individuals you're affecting by making these decisions. So it's sad, but yeah, that's why I think this younger generation, and that's a good thing. I know, like, I'm a recruiter, so I see it working with, like, college students trying to get internships. They're asking the questions. They're not just asking about, oh, like, what's the pay, or, you know, but they want to know about the culture and how they're being managed and the opportunities for growth. They're like, they want to know all this stuff. And even if the pay is good, if the culture and all that stuff ain't good with it, they like, I don't got time for it. I'm moving on. And they're serious about it. And I mean, I love that for them. I do. I really do. But yeah, it's amazing. So another thing that I wanted to talk to you about, because I know that you say you were really interested in it and you had a lot to say about attachment styles. So I wanted to hop into that a little bit, because I think that's something, I feel like everybody knows there are attachment styles, but really don't really know how that affects relationships or even what they are. So I guess first, can you just go over, like, what the attachment styles are, and we'll get into, like, how they work in relationships?
Mm-hmm. So attachment styles, they really start from birth and your first caregiver you have. And it all comes down to where your needs met as a baby or not. And it really sets the precedence for, like, the rest of your life and how you navigate relationships. Like, even though it happened years before, like, let's say a parent forgot to, like, feed their child when they're supposed to, like, I guess feed them over intervals of three, like, mm-hmm. even though it's a baby, you know, the memories don't remain kept, it's remembered that, oh, like, in that moment, like, my parent didn't come for me when I needed them. And that could be shown up in other ways. Like, let's say a parent left at daycare for a couple minutes, it stays, that memory, like, even though that child necessarily doesn't remember what happened, but in their brain they start to associate relationships with, oh, like, I can't really rely on other people for my needs in those moments. And I guess, like, so there's four, and, like, the example I was talking about, like, with a baby being having inconsistent needs being met, that could lead to, like, anxious, like, preoccupied attachment style. And that basically pretty much means it's, like, more an insecure attachment, because there's insecure and secure. So, like, there's a study I was learning about in class where they had, like, these different babies with the, like, different styles, and the ones with anxious attachment, even when the parent left for a long time, like, they would like not be able to be consoled for until that parent came back. And there's even more that ones that are more extreme, like disorganized attachment style. And it's kind of like a mix of all the insecure ones. And it got to the point where those babies' needs weren't met, like to the point that they would not cry, like when the parent left, or even when they came back, they didn't really have any emotions or whatever. So like those type of people who never really had their needs met by caregivers, it's more so they stopped caring even when the people that were supposed to show up for them, the caregiver, the parent, would come in. They wouldn't even really care. And then there's people with secure that have always had their needs met, like in their relationships. They've never really had like trust issues and stuff. And so they don't really have as much issues in relationships moving forward. But it all comes down to like that first relationship you make when you're born, like with your parents, like did they show up for you or did they not? Like even though it might be like necessarily like smaller things, like when I was saying, maybe a parent sleeps through a baby crying, like that could like put a domino effect into that child forming like insecure relationships with other people as they grow up.
I guess I never really thought about the fact that these are formed when you're a baby. And that's so scary just to think that those little things that happen to you when you're a baby are going to be carrying, you know, for the rest of your life. So I guess two questions I have. So one, when someone forms an attachment style based on like whatever happens, do you think that's something that can change throughout their life?
Mm. And like, this is another thing we were learning not too long ago, and it's more on the positive psychology side. And it shows, and that's something I love about therapy, acknowledges that people are capable of growth. And that's another thing we talked about, like, even though, like, we all took an attachment style quiz in the class and everyone was like, ooh, dang, I thought I was secure. But our teacher was like, hey, like, you're able to, it's a spectrum and you're able to grow. Like when you have those newer relationships, like let's say it could be platonic, like your friends show up for you or like your boyfriend or like other like father figures or mother figures. And you're able to grow like from, so insecure is not your forever. It might be hard to grow out of, to go into the secure part, but it is definitely possible.
Well, that's a good thing. That's definitely a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
And do you know or have examples of how it could show up in adult relationships? Because, of course, you gave the examples of how it can form when they're a child, like between the relationships with the baby and the parent. But once you're in an adult relationship, whether that be, I guess, a friendship or boyfriend, girlfriend or whatever the case may be, how does that show up or how can it affect those relationships?
I guess I could give more an example. Like, let's say a person is just coming out of like a toxic relationship where I guess they're sharing each other's locations and that person would turn it off and do leave them on red for a couple of hours. So now that person, and then like, let's say they later on get cheated on. So now they have this belief and schema that they're like, oh, men are trash. Like everyone's going to do me dirty. Like, so that's when they may have an anxious, preoccupied, like they're more in their thoughts, like, oh, everyone's going to cheat on me. Like, oh, I can't really trust anybody. But like, let's say they meet someone else and that person is coming to them and being like, hey, like, I'm going to be honest with you. And they're going to be met with like some conflict because that person is used to like people being toxic with them, people lying to them. And they may be like, ugh, like you're probably just doing this for show. You're like, eventually you're probably going to cheat on me anyway. And even though that person's trying to love them and show them that honesty, like over time, that wall slowly starts to fall when they're like, oh, this person's still here. Oh, this person is still being honest with me. Oh, they're coming back and they're actually communicating with me. And I think communication is a big thing into going into that secure part, because like when you're in those toxic relationships, communication is definitely not the peak and definitely not the center. And you're in those moments where like you're in confusion, and confusion is not the best place to be. And when you're going from that toxic relationship and now into like a more healthy one, and you're communicating, and as well as your partner communicating with you that I want to be here and I want to show up for you, like And another thing that could even help move over is them taking the time to learn your love languages and showing up and like reinforcing that, like acts of service. Like, let's say, like, hey, like, I want you to clean the house for me, like do dishes for me. And that person is able to do that consistently and show up and not really like throw it off and like do that every other like third time, like even though they're doing it. It doesn't really help with that, but it definitely is a journey. It definitely is a journey.
Yeah, it sounds like a journey. It sounds like a lot just to even understand what each one is and then how to work through it. So it's a lot. And then, I mean, I don't know if this is too personal, but do you know what your attachment style is or what do you think yours is?
When we took it, I had the disorganized, preoccupied, anxious one. I had all the insecure ones. I remember when I looked at the results, I was like, oop. And then my friend was like, oh, yeah, I got secure. I was like, oh, I did not get that. And it was so funny. They were like, oh, let's all share our results. I was like, let's not.
Like, nah, let's not. That's a lot.
Ooh. Yeah, so, but I think it's so helpful to know your attachment style, especially like, even though for people that are not in relationships, it's so good to know, because there would be moments where I met with conflict. Like for mine, like when I was reading the results, I was like, ooh, I do that. Like they shut down, they push back, self-sabotage. I was like, ooh, why are you reading me right now?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, see, I'm gonna have to go do the test, because I was looking and like I looked it up a little bit before we got on here, and then based on what you were saying, I'm like, okay, it sounds like I'm maybe avoidant, but now I'm like all these other ones, maybe I'm a combination, which is not a good thing. So I'm like, I'm gonna have a lot to work through.
Mm-hmm. But it's still able to grow. Like even when we see those results, whenever I told all my friends to do one, but I was like, mm-hmm. Okay, when you get those results, that's not your end all be all. Please. You could still grow on to be secure. Because even when I saw those results, I had to keep reminding myself. I'm like, it's still possible to work through that.
Yeah. But I feel like with anything in life, like once you know it, at least you can address it and kind of figure out how to get out of it or change it.
Oh, so, yeah. And it definitely teach you a lot about yourself as well. So I guess that kind of ties back to what we were talking about before, like how like I began to like start learning about myself. That's another like thing that could really help, because relationships, like we all like feed off of being in relationships with other people, so it's really important to know like how you navigate those relationships and notice those patterns that show up when you like are in those arguments. Like, why am I falling out with my friends all the time? Why am I always like in these relationships where they're like not the best? And it just makes you think about that more.
Yeah, I agree. And now I'm really gonna do mine. And I also think that it's good that you said like falling out with your friends too, because I think a lot of times, at least for me, I don't know, maybe other people don't do the same, but when I immediately think of relationships and, you know, how you interact with relationships and things like that, I'm automatically thinking like boyfriend, girlfriend, and these things are gonna fall into relationships with your friends, with your families, with your teacher. I mean, probably not your teachers, maybe not this stuff, but family and friends and stuff like that. It's not just a romantic relationship. And yeah, it could show up in different ways for different people, because then I'm assuming their attachment styles will play a part and y'all could be conflicting and bumping heads because of how y'all, you know, want that relationship to look like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm definitely going to do a little quiz, because I'm looking at, like, when you said the avoidant attachment, I was looking at, like, avoiding emotional connection and feeling uncomfortable with, like, intimacy and closeness, and I'm like, ooh, that's me. I'd be, like, really trying to avoid those, like, deep conversations and, like, you know, really getting in my feelings with people and stuff like that. So I'm like, maybe I'm avoidant, and now I feel like I have to kind of figure out where that came from in my childhood, which, you know, therapy. I'm about to go to her like, okay, so I found out I'm this. Let's talk about it. Let's work through it, girl.
Let's talk about it.
Right. Like, can you tell me what's wrong with me, please? It's going to be a whole struggle. But going to the next piece. So in your experience, do you feel like you've challenged any societal norms or expectations that have been imposed on Black women in order to really prioritize your well-being. And that could be like anything, like, you know, looking at Black women as aggressive or being loud, you know, Black women or whatever the case may be.
So I had such interesting childhood. I lived by like a Latino community. We're the only Black family in that community. It was so funny. They would invite us over. I knew about the tamales, the tres leches, like, oof. I'm surprised I don't know Spanish. But my school was predominantly white. My mom put me in a private school. Mm-hmm. So I never really been around majority Black people for my whole childhood. So I was having a lot of like identity crises, like, and it was so interesting because I didn't really fit into the mold of the people that I was around, especially at school. And they would always put like these stereotypes on me, and especially my name doesn't even help. Like, people would always like presume that I'm whitewashed for my name too. And like, I guess like beating the societal norms of, I guess, like, being seen more as, a lot of my teachers would assume, like, that I wasn't as competent as, like, my white peers. And, like, it would come up in, like, little microaggressions, you know, like, little. And it's so funny. It's just, like, looking back on it, being in that predominantly white school, it's just made me realize, like, I was able to find Black friends, but when we would go to like different functions with like the surrounding schools that had more Black people, we would more be seen as like whitewashed. We didn't listen to the same music because we weren't exposed to that. But it just made me realize, like, being Black isn't like one thing. There's so many different Black people. Like, we're not all the same. Like, and like when I would meet other people and like talk about like things that I guess are quote unquote unconventional to the Black community, like, it made me feel like I wasn't Black enough. But then I realized, I'm just like, we're not all the same. And that's low-key feeding into like the stereotype of like what people like force and put onto like Black people. And like, as I've come to know myself, like being Black enough, like, what does that even mean? Like, being Black enough, like, at this point, I feel like that's something like white people forced onto us to label us and like try and make it seem like we're all the same, you know, from those stereotypes. But I guess that's something that I beat over time, because like when I would meet other people, I wouldn't like, I guess, put them into boxes, because I'm just like, come on, we're not all the same.
Yeah. No, and I feel like I actually had a similar experience, not necessarily with the school portion, because I think my school was pretty well mixed and my neighborhood was pretty well mixed, but just looking at like the type of music I listened to, the activities that I like to do, it was always looked at as not necessarily Black. I was always the weird one. Like, they're like, oh, you listen to this or you want to do this. So I felt like when I was younger, I definitely tried to fit in and say, oh, no, I listen to this rap music, or I don't know, like, stereotypically Black things. I felt like I needed to kind of lean into those more and show, like, no, I'm Black, I do this stuff. And that would be even with like my friends or my family, like when I would hang out with them, I would still feel the need to kind of assimilate to what they liked to make myself feel like, oh, I'm Black, like, no, because I like this stuff. And then eventually, I think as I got older, same thing that you were saying, like, I realized, okay, like, Black people are not a monolith. Like, we have so many different Black people and different things that we like and different things that we do, and it doesn't have to look the same. Like, me liking The Weeknd, I mean, even though everybody loves him now, but I was the weird kid for listening to him, but like, it was a thing. Like, I was the weird kid. I mean, it was The Weeknd, but like, it's just like, just because I listen to The Weeknd or I play soccer or I do all these things doesn't make me any less Black than the person that's playing basketball and listening to rap music. And I had to really realize that and get to the point when I'm saying, like, okay, like, I'm gonna put that out there. I'm gonna say, yeah, I do listen to this or I do like these activities, versus trying to fit in. Because I think for so long I tried to fit in, and it was so uncomfortable trying to, you know, act these ways, knowing that this isn't what I was comfortable with. But Black people, we you know, we are the blueprint. We do everything, like literally everything. There's not one thing that we have to fit into.
No, it's heavy on blueprint. And it's okay. Just like, I just hate how a lot of Black people are, I just have to prove their Blackness by doing something. I'm just like, come on, guys, come on.
You don't got to do all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I will say it is a little hard sometimes to feel like you don't have to fit into those stereotypes, because like, especially when you're hanging out with people that may fit into those stereotypes, and then you're seeing the media and, you know, they always try to perceive us a certain way. So you, you know, you're like, dang, maybe I'm not, you know, acting the way I'm supposed to act, or maybe I'm, you know, not Black enough or things like that. And it's hard to get to the point when you realize like none of that matters. Like, I think my family just know now. I mean, they still call me the weird one, the weird free spirit one, which is fine. Like, yeah, like I think they be trying to say free spirit now, so they'll be calling me weird. But it, you know, back in the day, I feel like it really used to make me sad. Like, oh my gosh, like I don't fit in with my family. But now I'm like, yeah, it's me. I'm listening to that. I put that Willow Smith on the radio. I'm listening to it.
Yeah, no, hey, no.
Yeah, they're like, okay, what? My daddy be like, I don't know what you listen to. Okay, but I mean, I think you just got to get comfortable at some point and realize that everybody's different. Everybody of every race is different. Like, you're not going to all be the same just because you fall into this small category.
Yeah, and it's like, what about it? This is me.
And this is me. And I mean, it's a lot of areas in my life when I'm not that comfortable to be like, this is me. But, you know, in some areas, I've definitely gotten better and continue to grow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a thing. But kind of wrapping it up, like, what are some valuable lessons that you feel like you've learned from some mistakes that you've had in your 20s, like mistakes or setbacks, and how they have kind of shaped you to get, like, you know, to be a better person?
I think, so when I met my boyfriend, I want to say like 4 years ago. And when we first got together, I was in my I hate men era. Like, oh my goodness. Like, I remember when we first met each other, I say that in quotes because I didn't really notice him because I was not looking for no man. I wasn't looking at anybody, like literally, because I grew up, I'm a child of divorced parents. So that even add into that, because like it was an ugly fallout. And it made me look at men like in such a negative way. I was so ready to like go to the sperm bank, and I was like, yeah, I guess. It's just like what I'm learning now is not, I guess, like to look at negative things that happen to me, like more my values, as like something that works into my growth. Because I feel like all those negative experiences I've had with men, like, allowed me to like work into my independence, and also like realize that not like people are human, and like people make mistakes and stuff, and that's not really a reflection of me, like their mistakes. So I guess, like, I didn't think that's the biggest thing, like, that people have ability to grow, and not, like, even the people that may not have ability to grow, I have the power to not have them around in my life as well. So I think that's one. And I guess another one is realizing that everything is not a competition, like, especially in friendships, because I've noticed things in the past, like, where I would have, like, weird fallouts with my friends. It would more so be like a dynamic where it felt like a weird composition, like, and it's so weird. Like, now when I notice, when I make new friends that try to assert their dominance, I'm just like, okay, no, I've seen this story before. I'm like, it's okay. And it's just, yeah, not everything's a competition.
Yeah.
And that's a big one, that everything not a competition.
That is a big one. I feel like, especially like in your 20s, because I feel like that's such a pivotal time. Like you may see other people and they're getting like their dream job or they're getting married and they're having kids, and you're like sitting there like, okay, I'm not doing any of this. And I think you just have to realize that it's not your time for all that, which I mean, it's easier said than done. Like I say that, but I'll still be looking like, oh, dang, like I wish I had my dream job or I wish I had this. But it's really just realizing that when it's your time, those things will happen for you. So,
Yeah.
One of the biggest things that I learned in my 20s, and I won't even say learn, one thing that I'm learning currently is the fact that I can't be mad at people for doing things differently than I expected them to do it if I didn't voice what I expected of them. Because I think a lot of times I have an idea of how I want somebody to do something or how I want them to react to me or, you know, boundaries I have set in my mind, but I haven't made that clear to them. So then when they do it incorrectly, you know, these unheard boundaries that I've set, I feel like I get upset because I'm thinking like, that's obvious. Like, you should know how to treat me. You should know, you know, that I wouldn't like that or I would want you to help me with this. But I can't be mad at people if I'm not clear with my expectations. I have to tell you what I want. And then if you still decide you're not going to do it or you're not going to, you know, follow my boundary, then at that point I can be upset. But I can't expect people to know what I'm thinking at all times, especially like my husband, because I'd be irritated with him knowing I ain't even tell him why. But yeah, so I can't be mad at people for expectations that I didn't make clear.
Yeah, that's a big one. I relate to that one so much. And it just makes me think of, like, common sense is not that common. You could think all these other people think the same way as you. No. And, like, I would have a lot of conflicts like that where when I make new friends and, like, let's say they do something that I don't like, I'm just like, oh, I guess we're not friends anymore. But they're like, you didn't tell me that. And I think that's where a lot of girl friendships go wrong, where they don't communicate that. And then it gets weird and then they disappear. And especially in relationships. Oh my goodness. Like when I first met my boyfriend, I realized, I was like, oh, I have to communicate and tell you what I want. You don't know what I want from, you know, just the vibes. Just reading my vibe. Okay. So
we wish they did. It's just like, you should know. Yeah, like, no, right? It's obvious.
No.
Yeah. But I think that also goes back to like how people are raised too. Because I feel like, even like when me and my husband talk about stuff, like I realized we were raised very differently. So a lot of our experiences, like that I'm thinking like, this is obvious. Like, why wouldn't you do this? Or why wouldn't you know this? And he's like, no, like I never talked about that. Or I would have never expected this. And I feel like that happens with people in general, because everybody has different experiences. So sometimes like, even when I feel like it's common sense, it's not. It's something that I've learned. So now for me, it's common, but somebody else didn't learn it. So you can't hold people accountable for that until you set that expectation and let them know.
Oh, yeah. Heavy on communication. Communication is the answer to everything.
Yeah, girl. And I'm terrible at it. So
it's a learning process. It's a learning curve. Definitely.
It is. And it's a long learning curve. I'm just like, I've been with my husband for 11 years and he'd probably be like, girl, if you don't just say what you gotta say, I'd be like, just give me some time. Give me some time. It's a whole struggle. But yeah. And then actually going back to relationships, because I know you said you met your boyfriend like 4 years ago, which congratulations.
Thank you.
But going back to kind of like that self-care, how have you prioritized like taking that time to learn about yourself and focusing on like your goals and taking time for that self-care and everything while still maintaining your relationship?
I really feel like it went hand in hand because we met during the pandemic, during that time when I really started to self-reflect.
Okay.
Because my boyfriend will tell me if I'm doing something wrong. And like before I met him, I was like, oh, I'm such a good person. Like I do everything so good. But I met him, he's like, that's not normal. I'm like, oh, okay. And it felt like it was like a mirror to like the darkest parts of myself. So, like, and I realized, I was like, ooh, there are a bunch of things I need to work on, like communication, like, and another thing, like showing love to people the way I want love doesn't work for everybody. And I'm like, okay. And that being in a relationship, it definitely helped a lot because he's so honest. a little too honest sometimes, giving me lectures. And I'm just like, ooh, yeah, I do do. That was pretty weird. Like when we would debrief after like arguments and stuff. And I'm like, oh yeah, I definitely could have communicated that better. And it's just like, he's just been so helpful with me, like learning things about myself, because he would read me and he will tell me when I'm in the wrong. Definitely.
That's good.
No, it's so helpful. Yeah, because in the beginning I didn't like it, but now I appreciate it.
Yeah. So some men would just let you be, you know, doing the wrong things and not care, like, well, she'll figure it out. But the fact that he's willing to speak up and be like, no, like, that's not right. You need to figure this out. That's good.
Yeah.
That's
so helpful.
Yeah, and I do think relationships, and I will say specifically relationships outside of your family, I feel like they really teach you who you are. Because my whole life, like, I mean, I've been the same way my whole life, like, terrible at communication and things like that. But I think it was so normal within my family. Like, we don't talk about our feelings and get all, you know, weird. I mean, it's not weird. People that's emotional, y'all not weird. But... like, we don't do all that. So getting into a relationship where you gotta like talk about stuff and like go through problems, it opened my eyes, because it's so odd, and I'm still uncomfortable with having to do it, but I don't think I would have ever realized how uncomfortable I was if I wasn't in a relationship, because my parents don't do it, my cousins don't do it, like we don't do all that. So it's definitely something that you have to learn and work on. And I know my husband be tired of me. That's all I gotta say. He'd be tired of me. But yeah, like it's definitely a big thing. So I had to work on. Well, I don't do self care that well, but definitely just taking time for myself and stuff. And I think it's very possible in relationships. I think a lot of times people get so caught up in the relationship that they don't do these things. But it is important to make time for yourself, because if you don't make time for yourself, like, that relationship's not gonna last, because you'll get so consumed in it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I learned that so quickly, like, in the beginning. And then I'm just like, you know what? Something I've always promised myself, even from the beginning, as much as I love him, I don't want to lose myself in the relationship, but I still want to know, like, who I am. Because I feel like that's so important to have your own life, like, outside of, like, in a relationship. Because, like, right now, he's in medical school, and he's in a different state. So now, like, it's helpful that I'm in school now, so I'm not as occupied. But it's just, like, I feel like the relationship would have had so much issues if we didn't have our own things and we're just all about each other, for sure. It's so important to have your own life outside.
It is important. And I think that is something you have to learn. Because I know when me and my husband got together, we were bad. Like, when I tell you, we was together every single day. Like, every single day I was at his house. Like, we did everything together. I mean, technically, I guess we still do everything together. But I feel like now, at least we have stuff for ourselves. Like, I just feel like we was really, like, spending every waking moment together. Like, we ain't get no time. Like, we were both going to school, so we would go to school, then come back together, we would eat together, like, do everything together. Like, even when he was, like, playing the game and stuff, I'm sitting right there in his face, like, that man didn't get a break from me. So, but I definitely feel like
the honeymoon phase will do that.
Girl, and that's the thing, like, I've always, like, the honeymoon phase is so weird, because I just feel like, and maybe it's just because he's obsessed with me. I feel like he listening. He obsessed with me. But I just feel like I don't like the term the honeymoon phase, because it really scared me, honestly, because I'm like, okay, it's going to be amazing for however long, like the first year, and then we're going to start having problems and I'm going to like be going through it. And it really made me nervous to think that, you know, it wasn't going to stay this amazing and it wasn't going to be that great or whatever. But I feel like the honeymoon phase is still going. Like, I mean, he'd be irritating me half the time, but I feel like we still be, you know, having a good time, joking around, like, just like it was when we first started, you know, when we first got together. So I was very scared about that. And even, like, when people say everything changes when you get married, I was scared about that. I'm like, Lord, so we're going to get married, and all of a sudden I'm not going to like him, and we're going to be arguing, and, you know, all these things are going to change. And ain't not, like, none of that happened. So I just feel like, in my mind, we still in the honeymoon phase. We living our best life.
Yeah, I really feel like the friendship helps that honeymoon phase stay alive. Like, it's at the end of the day, as long as they're your best friend, like, I feel like it goes the distance. And you saying that marriage doesn't change a thing, that reassures me, because I, whenever I hear that, I'm like, ooh, scary. Yeah.
I was the same way. And I mean, the only thing that I could see is, like, if people don't live together first, because I know some people, they don't live together until they get married. So then you move in and you're trying to learn all these things about people. And I mean, I understand the concept of, like, you shouldn't live together before you get married, but I think there are so many things that you learn about a person when you move in together. And I just don't think that should wait until after marriage, because you can realize y'all are not compatible when y'all are together. Like, the way y'all clean, the way y'all, you know, like your house, like, there's a lot of things that could break up a relationship. And if you wait until after marriage, it's not gonna work. Like, before we got married, how long have we been living together? I feel like we were living together for like 4 years or something before we even got married. Wow. So at that point, it was like we were kind of already living like a married couple. We just didn't have like the official. So honestly, the only thing that changed once we got married is like we combined our finances all the way. Like, we have a bank account together and all that, but nothing else changed. And I feel like people that say that, like, I don't know if it's the people that like got divorced and, you know, their lives changed, but don't let it scare you. Cause I feel like if y'all are in a good space before marriage, like, it shouldn't change after marriage.
Yeah. Cause like, I low-key, we're low-key, like, transitioning into that. So I would, when I say low-key, because I don't know, I'm not going on my knee, so I don't.
You're like, I'm not doing that.
Oh, never that. But hearing that makes me feel so much better, because, like, I feel like it's the scorned people, the bitter people that be saying that, not that I think about it.
It has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not saying, like, there's not going to be, like, hard times during marriage. Like, I talk to my parents all the time because they've been married for 35 years, I think. They just had an anniversary. Yeah, right. So they've been married for, like, 35 years. So obviously, like, she tells me, like, yeah, we go through stuff. Like, we argue. We do all this stuff. But it's just, like, how y'all handle it and, like, bounce back afterwards. Like, so obviously it's not going to be perfect for the whole time that y'all are together. But obviously y'all are a team, have to figure out how to make it work. And I mean, I'm saying that when I'm the worst at communication, but I mean, it's definitely possible. I don't think it has to change once you get married, especially if y'all set those expectations before taking that next step. Cause I don't know, like, if you live together, y'all are already in a relationship. Like, I don't know what's the big thing that would change to just ruin the relationship after that. Yeah,
that is true.
Yeah, so y'all got this. Y'all will be happy, happily ever after, married. I'm going to talk to you. It's going to be 40 years from now. I'm going to say, y'all still married, girl?
No, it's so funny. I start this joke where I hold out my hand. I'm like, so what's up?
Right. Sometimes I just, you know, push them into it a little bit.
Yeah, just a little. So we finish the school because I don't want in the midst of school, like, all the debt, the loans. So we're waiting for that.
Yeah, but make sure you make it clear when you're ready, because apparently my husband, and he talks about this all the time, and he's so irritating because when we were younger, we were like 23, and people around us was getting engaged and stuff, and I told him, I'm like, I'm not ready to get engaged, so don't even be thinking about that. So then as we got older, I'm like, all right, like, what's going on with a ring at? He's like, you said you didn't want to get engaged. And I said, that was like 4 years ago, sir. Like, what are we doing here? Like, and he was like, you said, I was like, I didn't say never, just at this point in our lives. And he's like, you didn't make that clear. So I'm like, okay, you just won't go never propose because I said that when I was a child. Okay, I'm not a child, but 23. So men are a little slow sometimes, a little slow.
Oh, heavy on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I definitely made a timeline. I was like, okay, when this year comes up, ring. Yes. Because like, yeah. I'm realizing I have to explain things. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's good. So, okay, at least y'all got a little timeline going. That's a good thing, because I know some couples, they just be together forever and they don't know the expectations. And once again, you can't be mad if there's no expectations.
Yeah, definitely cannot. Like what we were talking about, you definitely cannot.
Yeah. But yeah, and I think that was really my last question. So I really want to say, first of all, thank you so much for coming. Like, I really had a good time talking to you, and I'm going to still be creeping on your TikTok because you do post some really good videos.
I fell off a little bit.
Oh. It's okay. You're still doing a good job. I mean, you're doing better than me because I haven't posted a TikTok since sometime last year, girl. I can't do a TikTok. Life is a struggle.
it could be a lot. It definitely could. But thank you so much for me.
Of course. And do you want to shout out your TikTok? Because I don't remember your TikTok name at this very moment of my life.
Not me forgetting my own.
Oh, I'm about to have to pull it up. But I'm trying to...
My memory. So you guys could find me at Self-Care Consultant on TikTok. And I'm pretty sure it's the same thing on Instagram, too. It's either Self-Care Consultant or Self-Care Consultation.
Okay.
Because it was taken. But on TikTok, Self-Care Consultant.
Okay, and I'll put both of them in the description so they could just pull it from there, too. So it's nice and easy. They don't got to do too much to try to find you.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I had a good time, too.
Yes, I did, too. And was there anything that you wanted to leave the holes with? Any final words?
Let's see. I want to leave and say you're capable of growth, like, no matter what you've been through, no matter, like, how you're carrying yourself right now and the problems that you have, you could work through it and grow through it. You're not going to be the same person you were before, and you're capable of growing into the woman, man, any type of person that you are that you want to be later on.
Hoes, thank you so much for coming back to another episode of Morning Cup of Hope podcast. I hope y'all enjoyed this week. Make sure y'all follow us on all social media platforms, as well as go ahead and leave a review because we love reviews. Also, make sure you follow our guest Brittany on all social media as well. We'll go ahead and put her information below so you'll have it easy to you. But we'll see y'all hoes next week. I hope y'all have an amazing week. Peace.